The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Football Weekly Extra. Week of surprises capped when Pod actually shows up for work. And what a lot's been going on in our absence. Wolves win at Anfield. Roy going down the chute like a straw-haired, sorcerer-eyed Santa. Arsenal beating Chelsea, then stuffing it up at the DW. And Fulham, West Ham, and even Carlo Ancelotti's Blues winning football matches. With a big year in prospect, or two in Gareth Bale's case, the Pod looks forward to what awaits in the second half of the season, at top and bottom. Enjoys your posts and tweets, and then knocks off early for, you know, New Year's. All that in today's Football Weekly Extra. On board today, everybody, and can I just say Happy New Year in case we forget later on, we have... Fernando Duarte.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're very well, Fernando. Lovely to see you back here.
Likewise.
In pod land. And you're looking well. That's good.
Thank you very much.
Alongside him, it's Kevin McCarra.
Hi, James.
Voice of authentic journalism. You've been busy visiting football stadiums, reporting on football matches.
Yes, well, I went to Birmingham. That was in the fog.
Yeah.
Yes, Manchester United robbed there.
Right. There was much missed at Birmingham, but enough about Wayne Rooney's performance. Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James.
Hi, Jacob. You'll be chatting to us about the Amers.
Yes, the Theatre of Doom.
The Theatre of... Well, I'm surprised. I thought you were going to be in a more optimistic mood.
We're always pessimistic there.
All right. Okay. And give that man a medal. Despite his raging fever, Sean Ingalls in the pod.
Hi, James.
Hi, Sean. All right, then. What a festive period it's been. Some leagues stop for a winter break. The Premier League says no, let's ramp it up to the max. 4 rounds in 11 days. Bosh. Upset, surprises, woof. And probably the most dramatic evening of all was just last night, which is good because it saves us doing research on the other bit. But anyway, Wednesday night, Sean.
Well, Liverpool were absolutely shocking again last night. I mean, a defeat to the bottom team of the Premier League is one thing, it can happen, but there's a substantial body of evidence accumulating now that suggests that Podson isn't good enough. There's, you know,
this just in.
Well, no, but you know, I think a few people have given him the benefit of the doubt, even after the Carling Cup defeat Northampton, even after the home defeat at Blackpool. But the fact is, Liverpool are now on 22 points, which is their lowest points tally heading into a new year since 1953-54, when they were relegated.
A couple of tweets here. Ewan McMorrow says, Liverpool fans, isn't it time they stopped blaming management for the problems and started looking at the star players? Magic Spongers, what do we think of the increasingly vocal Rafa Brigade on Merseyside? Of course, Mr. Benitez now once more resident down the road from Anfield. Fernando, you have Liverpool-esque inclinations. What do you feel?
Well, I just feel that the cop spoke last night, basically. Yeah. You know, when you lose the cop, it's pretty much...
Hodgson for England, they
yeah, well, it's a nightmare season, I don't need to tell. I mean, Shani's presentation of stats were brilliant. Was brilliant. I just think that there is a point when you say that the players are not performing. It's not a bad group of players. They shouldn't be at the point where they are, and especially the number of points that they have accumulated so far. It seems quite difficult to know where this is going.
I say, Fernando, it interested me. You talk about being a decent squad of players. I looked at the team that played the European Cup final in 2007, and it wasn't much better than the current team, with the exception of Alonso and Mascherano in the centre of midfield. I think there's probably more of a hole in the centre of the team now than there was in the past, especially when Gerrard has played purely as a support striker.
But what's
striker.
Amazing is that he put Raúl Morales on the right last night when they've been playing really well with him in the centre, and then he had to accommodate Gerrard back in the middle, and Wolves just zipped it around him for
just
90
three
minutes.
Shots on goal. Jacob, with Gerrard back in the team. From Liverpool.
Actually, to be fair, Gerrard was playing a bit deeper last night, wasn't he? He wasn't as far up as he had
been. I thought he was hiding throughout. He didn't want the ball, and you know, it was just a lot of Hollywood passes which were going straight through to the Wolves keeper. And they're just they've got Fernando Torres, who's a world-class striker, and they're just hoofing the ball forward to him and trying to get him to...
But he also seems disillusioned.
He does. I suppose you look at the game against Chelsea where he scored twice and you think, well, maybe he was finding his form again, but when he plays like that last night, you think he probably doesn't quite be bothered anymore.
He looked quite sort of the defeatist almost, didn't he? Is that kind of body language?
Yeah.
Full credit to Wolves, who had the worst away record in the league, had just been beaten at home by Wigan, after which McCarthy had said, we got slapped around, I don't want any sympathy, we were shit. But now...
He's like talking about caramel.
Yeah, that's right.
It was very odd.
Yeah.
Actually, they played really well. I mean, really good football. It wasn't a backs-to-the-wall performance by any manner of means. It was thoroughly deserved.
Right. Liverpool joined the merry throng down there in the bottom, all within 3 points of the drop. And what happens next? They face Bolton on Saturday. Will Roy Hodgson be there, Sean Ingle?
I think he will, but I think the key thing now is, will Liverpool back Hodgson in the transfer market, which opens in the next couple of days? I mean, that's assuming he's around long enough to make any signs.
Do you think they will, on the strength of his signing so far?
You wouldn't think so, would you? I mean, Konchesky's been a disaster. I think Morelos has been all right when he's been played in the right position, but he's probably the only one. Cole hasn't done very well. I know he came in just before Hodgson. I think another pertinent point is that 2 years ago today, Liverpool were 3 points clear at the top of the Premier League with one defeat in 20 matches. Now they've lost 8 matches in 18. Now, you know, any SV are smart people. They're going to look at Hodgson and surely they're going to say... the question is, well, there's a ready replacement. And I think people on the COP would argue that there's Dalglish, there's Benitez. I'm not sure that either of those are the right...
I think
people,
it's showing their whole philosophy is to avoid doing the knee-jerk thing. And maybe they will appoint Dalglish, but it wouldn't be like them. They've been very kind of scientific in baseball and trying to analyse what they should do. And I'm not really sure returning to former heroes is a good idea.
What would the scientific thing be then?
I don't know. I'm just saying I don't think they'll say, well, pick a hero. That's I don't know who they should.
You don't need stats to tell you how awful Liverpool have been.
I mean, but you know, my point is, Dalglish might be great, but I mean, I remember in 2000, Celtic wanted him as manager and he wouldn't be manager. He wanted to be general manager. He didn't fancy the front line, which is fair enough. And John Barnes was his head coach. So what assurance do we have that if he did come back, he'd be ready for the job?
Did he not say in his autobiography, you know, he lost his way at Liverpool after Hillsborough? Quite understandably.
Yeah,
he went
course.
To every funeral of the people that died, and he wishes he had have taken a few months out before coming back. And do you think perhaps he feels that...
I can see why he wanted to not to be in the front line. But the question is, you know, if he comes back now... You know, does that necessarily work? I mean, there are too much time passed since he was in that position.
His last job in the Premier League as well, he was sacked by Newcastle, who were a dreadful at the time.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, with regard to Hodgson, you know, you can be patient, but there's sometimes just being patient for the sake of it. Mm. And people are saying you have to give him a, you know, transfer window, but has he really earned that?
It's called hypochondria, being patient for the sake of it.
But can they afford missing the Champions League football again? I mean,
which
is highly likely. I mean, this is going to be a bit interesting to take a look at, because they will need desperately to qualify for now 2012, if I'm not wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, but they probably won't get into the Europa League.
No, it doesn't seem like it, does it?
Oh, I don't know about that. It's possible.
They're
how many points are they off seventh?
They're only 5 points off, I think.
Yeah. They're also 3 points above the bottom three.
Yeah.
They do admittedly have a few games in hand.
Mm. Right, well, we should
see.
The
thing is, I mean, like,
as you say,
lower teams are going to Anfield and not even respecting Anfield anymore. You know, when Wolves and Blackpool go and win there's something weird going on.
Yeah.
And what, you know, in years gone by, you'd expect Liverpool to be pounding on the door when they're 1-0 down at home, and there was just nothing really, was there? I was expecting still Gerrard to pop up with an Olympiakos style volley, and it's just force of habit. It's partly because of what happened when in the cup final against them for West Ham, but you know, there have always been these times when Liverpool would just somehow find an equaliser or a winner, and Wolves were just comfortable throughout.
All right. Well, it's nice to see there are still some constants in football. Arsenal, for example, who just when it looked like they were about to maybe pull level with the Manchester team, stuff it up away to Wigan. Now, whose fault was it? Was it Wenger's for those 8 changes? Was it the players for thinking the game was already won?
I mean, but watching the highlights, they played well enough. I mean, it's not as if he picked a team that couldn't win the game.
Oh, Shavin's goal, eh?
I know, it's fantastic. But, I mean, it doesn't do much for Shavin, but what he does do is quite memorable. But to go 2-1 up and then lose concentration and be unable to win. But Arsenal are kind of walking cliche, aren't they? I mean, that's what you'd say about them. You know, they get into situations and they blow it. If you see them the previous game when they beat Chelsea, they just played at too high a pace and too well-controlled passing for Chelsea to cope. In a season where people are fallible, Arsenal might be able to get away with this and still be in contention for the title.
But do you not think that the team that beat Chelsea would have done a bit better? Would have maybe have...
Well, I mean, from what I saw, they seemed to outplay Wigan. They just didn't get the job done. And that's something that even the first team has been known to do at times.
I mean, if fairness to Wenger, they've got a difficult game coming up away at Birmingham at the weekend. What confuses me is whenever I see Johan Juro play, I think decent player, you know, he's... Against Chelsea, he handled a Drogba. He completed 36 out of 37 passes. Also, looking at the stats, whenever he's played in the Premier League this season, which has only been 7 times, Arsenal have won all 7. Now, I'd argue, Kevin says it's a loss of concentration. I just personally, I don't think Scalacci is very good. I think Koscielny with him panics. So I think if you put two players that are prone to mistakes together, eventually are going to make mistakes. And I'm not sure why Wenger doesn't give Dura more of a run.
I think Scalacci is the best of the two, but neither of them are very good. I take your point. But clearly, the thing is, he sees Dura all the time and doesn't think, obviously doesn't think he's cut out to play from the start in every game. And what can you do? He's a manager. I mean, he can't be that wrong, can he?
But Kevin, sorry, on a managerial note, in the big book of manager do's and don'ts, yes. I think item one is don't make massive changes to a winning team. Taking eight starters, I know Fabregas was suspended, that was a change he had to make. Changing eight starters from a team that had finally realised its potential, does it not send completely the wrong message? A bit like, this is effectively a Carling Cup match for us. We can take it easy at Wigan.
Yeah, well, I can understand that kind of interpretation, but looking at the players they had and what I saw of the highlights, they played well enough to win the game. Mm. Arsenal have blown it before, you know, with full strength teams. I mean, this is not a first time or a novelty. I think they still could win the Premier League. But they make it hard for themselves, and not just in this game last night, regularly. They've lost three at home, for example, happening in the Premier League, which is astonishing.
Just on the eight changes, can anyone explain the difference between that and Blackpool making 10 changes against Aston Villa?
Wolves.
Yeah. I'm looking forward
Rule
to the...
Rule E20 being breached, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the charge Arsenal are going to get. And I'm not actually having a go at Arsenal here, because I don't think there's anything wrong with what they did, but the rule is just an absolute sham.
This rule's been invoked in Brazil a lot in the last Brazilian League round, where everybody could win the title, and there was some talk about teams being bribed to produce... being rewarded financially to actually produce better performances against each other. And some people say, no, in the Premier League, you cannot do this. You can't just like rest squads and stuff like that.
Fernando, what's the difference between a bribe and being rewarded financially?
Because a bribe is something illegal. It is not illegal for you to actually tell a team, listen, if you beat those guys and we win the league, right, we're going to give you 10 grand or like 100 grand.
Just unethical, not illegal. Yeah, okay, yeah. All right. Kevin, you were at the Emirates for that extraordinary Arsenal performance. The one against Chelsea. A terrific game, terrific atmosphere as well. It just looked like something was really beginning that night, like a corner had been turned.
You could feel it in the game as it developed. I mean, after about half an hour, Arsenal got to kind of fluency and speed of passing that Chelsea couldn't cope with. And you knew that Chelsea are not a uniformly old team, but their best players are old. Drogba going on 32, Frank Lampard coming back at 32, and passing the ball nicely, but not able for the time being to make the bursts into the penalty area. Chelsea are a team who are kind of winding down, and you wonder if the will is there in Abramovich to spend another fortune. I think not. I mean, normally in football history, you know, at Milan, for example, Berlusconi spends a fortune, but he doesn't keep on doing it. It's quite simple if you own Chelsea and Abramovich. He obviously doesn't want to spend that again, but he does want them to be near the top. And can he keep them near the top while cutting the expenditure?
They finally won a game, meanwhile, against Bolton on Wednesday night, their first win in six in the Premier League. Well, that was pretty narrow stuff. Does that in any way change your impression of them?
Well, it shows you the context we have that we think that's quite good to beat Bolton 1-0 at home. I mean, at the start of the season when they were all fresh, you'd take that for granted that they would beat Bolton. So it was so tight last night. I don't think it was a penalty against John Terry. I don't think his arm was stuck at right angles or anything, you know. But it was that kind of incident where, who knows, it could have been given. I mean, that's how tight it was. So I think it's reassuring for Chelsea, but it doesn't augur the beginning of a new era of domination.
All right. Five managers have been fired in Abramovich's time. Okay. I didn't know this till yesterday, but
The Russians always correct you when you say that wrong.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's their right, isn't it?
No, you did right, yeah. But I always said Abramovich, and then Abramovich.
Abramovich. Anyway, he's fired five managers. All of them had a better record prior to dismissal than Carlo Ancelotti has now. Interesting.
I also think it's cheaper sacking managers than buying players, isn't it? I mean, I know you have to give them a payoff, but it's still cheaper than buying a new team.
Right, but I don't think there's any question that they're going to...
who knows? Come the summer, I mean, you know, who knows?
One of the less good bits of news from last night, the fact that Ivanovic picked up another yellow card. He'll be suspended for this weekend's game, which sees Chelsea host Aston Villa. Ooh, tough game that one. Aston Villa at home. Yep.
They've won 1-9.
Bottom of the form table, Aston Villa. Jacob, you were making the point that it's a very bad week, this, for former Liverpool managers.
Yep. Houllier has completely lost the plot, hasn't he? And they've got the worst, along with West Brom, they've got the worst defence in the league, which just makes an absolute mockery of the fact that he's frozen out Richard Dunn.
It's incredible. Isn't Martin another great tactician? I mean, he knew that, so he got out with lovely timing, didn't he? But he thought, well, you know, the budget's been cut, the team's not good enough, it's downwards, I'm leaving.
Mm. We'll talk more about Villa and whether they could indeed go down in a short while. We'll also be discussing whether this could be the year of Spurs or City. Mm. Now, until not long ago, it did look like this was going to be Chelsea's title or maybe United's. Of course, it could still be theirs. Arsenal keep pulling stunts like the one against Wigan yesterday. So you do wonder if the two teams that actually managed to get two wins over Christmas, didn't drop points, Spurs and City, if they might be the outsiders in this year in which nobody seems to really want to grab the title, you know, with both hands. That's a rubbish way of putting it. Really lay down a marker for the Premier League title.
Well, as Barry will testify, I backed City at 20-1 about a month ago. Not out of any deep belief they'll win it, and I still don't think they'll win the league. But
they're joint top.
Just because A, the players they've got, and B, the price was too big. Despite all the sort of the factions and the fractious behaviours of their squad, they are, you know, they're continuing to put it together, and I thought they were very impressive against Villa.
Why can't City win this? There's always this kind of default thing, City are near the top, but they're not going to win. But why can't
City
they?
City-itis, isn't it? Like when they could have gone top, and then they lost to Everton at home. You just feel they've always got it within themselves to screw it up somehow.
Yeah, but all these teams have.
I'd say 2 points. First of all, their home record, they've played 10 games at home, only won 5, which generally, you know, you want a strong home record. Secondly, they've still got to play, I think, all their main rivals away from home. Now, City's away record...
Well, that's an advantage, then.
Well, City's away record is the best in the league, but you'd imagine going away to Chelsea, going away to United, going away to Arsenal, they will drop points. So
the thing is, Sean, I mean, the other night they scored freely. Admittedly, it was a vulnerable team they were playing, but don't you feel that Mancini has kind of took over, thought to himself, this club's too excitable, and he made it quite boring for a while, didn't he, to try and get some foundations in place? Now, the only kind of excitement about them is Balotelli's personality and temperament, but he has got a far more controlled-looking team at the moment.
Well, indeed, there is excitement as well. David Silva's looking good.
Oh, David Silva's a lovely player. I mean, but people haven't been saying, it's like Barcelona, have they? I mean, it's not that kind of.
But Mancini at Inter was never like that.
No, because of the money invested in City, I think he's against that. I mean, he's not trying to put on a spectacle. Chelsea, he's trying to get back to basics and fundamentals, and you know, and that's what he's instilled.
I just think they can always implode. That's the thing. That's the impression. City. Yeah, that's the gut feeling that I have. In the beginning of the season, I might burn my tongue badly because I thought they wouldn't even make the top four. Mm. Now it seems that they might actually make it to Champions League. But still, I'm always expecting something horrendous to go with that team. I mean, because it seems to me that they're still not a group. So, you know, they're still not friends, etc. As Sean was saying, it looks like, you know, the Soviet Union in a certain way. You know, 16 independent republics still under the same name, but at any moment something can go wrong. You know?
No, I completely take your point. They do lack, from the outside, it looks like they do lack that kind of team spirit. But all these teams are lacking something. They happen to be lacking team spirit. Arsenal are lacking loads of things. Spurs are lacking the ability to defend. But they're potentially title winners as well, are they not?
Definitely, yeah.
When you think, Man U have still got to go to Arsenal and Spurs and, you know, so, and they've had some hard games.
What about Spurs, Kevin?
I can't see them winning it.
Really? Why not?
Depth, isn't it?
Because I think they will not win enough games consecutively to do it. I don't think they're strong enough defensively compared to some other teams.
They're also a fair distance off the top of them.
5 points behind.
5 points behind.
They've had a game more than United.
Yeah, I mean, they have more lapses, don't they?
And they're playing two competitions as well. I mean, and it's a massive Champions League tie. I just don't think they got enough of a squad to actually resist the whole stuff. But then again, all the other teams were supposed to be withholding the pressure, crumbling as well. I don't know. Mm. It's a very good outside bet, but I still think if anybody was surprised, it could be City, although with an eye on the potential self-implosion or self-destruction button.
They have come on a mile, though, a ton, haven't they, under higher Redknapp? But maybe not this season, though.
They are going to be missing Jonas Kabul for the next three games, though, after his...
But the last two games, they've had men sent off when they were winning, and they've easily breezed through the games and against is it Newcastle and Villa.
Yeah.
And, you know, against Villa, I did that game, they were so comfortable. And they sort of started to look a little bit like they were starting to look like a solid unit.
Right.
And on the break, Bale was absolutely fantastic.
But that's the thing, they have two of the players of the season, Gareth Bale and Van der Vaart.
And
three.
Modric.
Luka Modric.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I've been to the pod before, but I have a couple of friends that go to see Spurs every week. And again, that sort of playing in the centre, in that pillow role, I think he's been absolutely superb this season. And I don't think he gets enough credit for it, and nor I think does Redknapp for actually pushing him across, because everyone thought of him as a left-sided midfielder when he joined, or even playing behind the striker, but no, he's been great this season.
And I remember people saying, oh, maybe this guy is too short for the Premier League, etc. There was all that talk about him not being able to stand the the pace, and he's doing wonderfully.
I mean, apart from whether they win the league or not, they've brought a bit of excitement that the Premier League could do with, because, I mean, a lot of the teams, talking of Liverpool and so on, have declined. At least Spurs are a team that you see getting stronger and better.
I think this is off the top of my head, though. I think they've kept two clean sheets all season.
Oh, yeah, they don't say that. I mean, they missed Dawson for a long time, didn't they?
Yeah, well, he's back now.
I know. I mean, that's part of the reason for
that. He's been very good the last few games, yeah.
So, like I say, everybody's got something. Man United, what's their Achilles heel? Is it Wayne Rooney? 28 games now and counting without a goal.
His
from
last
open play.
Goal in open play, was it March against
March
Bayern Munich?
Yeah,
yeah. It's extraordinary. And he played kind of with conviction for about 5 minutes the other night. You know, and then
this is the draw at Birmingham.
I was at Birmingham, yes.
Yeah.
Honestly, the first few minutes he got a sort of half chance and he quite busy, and he get more and more discouraged. But the kind of interesting contrast to that is Berbatov, who I think quite likes the fact that Wayne Rooney's not the kingpin at the moment. He was wonderful the other night. I mean, that play for the goal, where the flick to Gibson, the return ball, and the finish drilled in at the near post is beautiful. You know, and although it's interesting that, again, Ferguson left out Berbatov against Arsenal. When he's playing one man up, he didn't trust Berbatov to do enough work to do that job.
Do you think that's changed, though? Was Birmingham a sign that now Berbatov is the more central player to his plans?
Well, certainly with Rooney in that form, he must be. I mean, I find it so confusing, because I remember watching Rooney at 16 and thinking, this guy is just such an intuitive, brilliant, natural talent. The game comes effortlessly to him. But life goes on and your life gets more complex. And he's now got all these inhibitions. You know, you could never have conceived of that when you watched him as a prodigy.
Somebody made the point, how old is Wayne Rooney?
24.
Right. 24, yeah. But how many games has he played? That's the thing. You saw him at 16. He's played eight years. And while there are players who can keep going for ages and ages and ages, you have Van der Sar, your Scholes, to mention two of his United teammates, they're always credited, by Sir Alex especially, with living monastic lives and taking care of themselves. Something Wayne Rooney's not exactly famous for doing. So I hate to be the person saying, oh, he's finished, etc. Yeah. But the question is he? How long do you wait for him?
I can't believe he's finished after 8 years. It's not that long, really.
No.
But I can see you're saying that he might not be playing to his mid-30s.
He might not be what he was.
No, I think it must be psychological, because you can't lose the ability he had.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know that goal against Bayern Munich I mentioned? He was on a streak of scoring until he scored a pile of goals.
17 in 14 games.
Yeah. And then bang. You know, I can't believe that some sort of shutter came down that night and ended his career.
What was interesting about that run, is that a lot of them are very sort of prosaic goals in the area, sort of your average kind of normal striker. He wasn't doing anything special, I think. He seems to have lost that a little bit. You know, when he came through, that goal that he scored against Arsenal for his first goal against for Everton, it's not quite at the top of his game anymore, is he?
But I should say, incidentally, I mean, that United should have won, but for that goal that ought to be disallowed at the end. I don't think Manchester United are what they were. There's no counterpart to Ronaldo. Rooney's not where he was, but by heavens, the manager's not bad, is he? he seems to keep on picking teams that can do the job.
I think I completely agree with you, but it's interesting that with Vidic and Ferdinand playing together, they conceded 10 goals in 12 games, and you'd think if they stay fit, they will be the team to beat.
So, title winners, Sean?
Well, I think at the moment you'd say United.
Jake?
United.
Kevin?
Well, I picked Arsenal for the season starter, so I may as well stick with it for a bit longer.
All right, good for you. And Fernando?
Well, logic tells me United for all the reasons, but the heart somehow picks Arsenal. I would love to see Arsenal winning the league again.
All right.
You know, kind of reward for Wenger's, stubbornness, but also because they try to play a good game still.
Fascinating stuff. We'll be looking at some of your posts and tweets and the situation at the bottom after this. All right, part three. Let's hear what you've been saying, listeners. Matt Fitcher says, will more managers move than players in the transfer window? No, then seems to be the answer to that. VK80 says, what are your memorable 2010 football moments? Don't say Barca or Spain, please. Jacob?
On a personal I suppose it would have to be West Ham beating Tottenham this season. First time in about 5 years.
All right, did you cry?
I wasn't there, but I had to do a little jig around my bedroom.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Okay, those are the most special, I always think. Fernando?
Well, on the pitch was Germany 4, Argentina 0.
Right.
Because I always love seeing them being beaten mercilessly. And that German team was quite excited, but perhaps the only good thing they woke up.
Right.
Out of the pitch was a sad, acknowledgement that football is just about the money when FIFA decided to reward Russia and the mighty Qatar with the next two World Cups. That was basically when I stopped believing Santa Claus for sure.
What? Hey?
That's when I finally stopped believing Father Christmas.
Yeah, don't say that again. Yeah. Producer Ian, safeguard younger listeners and older listeners
those who still believe.
Sean Ingle.
I mean, the World Cup was a pretty rubbish tournament, but I did enjoy Ghana v Uruguay. And the first half of Spain v Chile was really exciting, because Chile actually said to Spain, we're going to take you on. There were three
It'd be
goals.
Great if that's what actually happened, if they'd gone up to them, the centre circle, saying, hey, Spain, we're going to take you on.
But that's how it
but
felt
they did.
Like.
They had Bielsa on the bench. When I was discussing about a foreign manager manager for Brazil, I wanted Bielsa to come. Yeah. That guy's crazy, man.
Kevin.
I'm going to break the law and mention Spain. Not to say how wonderful they were, but to say what a relief it was when Iniesta scored that goal in the World Cup final and made sure that Holland didn't kick their way to a penalty shootout. You know, I think that was a great relief and a victory for football, to use a cliche. Mm. The other thing I would say is Jose Mourinho, I know we've heard of him before. Incredible manager. You look at what he did at Inter, goes there, does a double, wins the European Cup, leaves, they fall apart again. He's now won the European Cup in two countries. He'll come back to England at some point. I have this vision of him managing Manchester United one day and doing it in a third country.
No.
I think Jose Mourinho is, we should know he's a great manager, but you have to stop sometimes and just actually think, put it in context, just how amazing the feats that he has pulled off.
He is a serial winner.
Yeah, the impact it has like that at Inter, everything works perfectly. He leaves, it all falls to pieces.
Mm. I just wanted to add one more thing just Xavi finally getting the recognition he deserves.
Yeah, lovely.
And putting that Daily Mail article to bed finally.
Yes. Tell us about the Daily Mail article. Well,
I think it was it 2009?
The best players in the world, full stop.
And Xavi.
And Xavi. Yeah. Ooh, Frankie Fears posting on the subject of who would win a fight, etc. Shane McGann, the Pogues versus Everton. Surely a fight, says Frankie Fears, with Shane McGann is a win-win situation on the basis that whatever happened, you could still legitimately turn around and say, yep, you should see the other bloke. Gib Football Show says, how do we think Leonardo will get on at Inter? Will the fans accept him? Accept him? They have done. They had their first training session Inter the other day. They paraded their trophy that they just picked up in Abu Dhabi. And Leonardo looked very classy, casual, alongside Moratti. They sang, who doesn't jump up and down as a Milan fan? And he didn't jump up and down. But nobody seems bothered about that. I think there seems to be a lot of optimism. I know that Raphael Honigstein was poo-pooing his chances the other day. But I think it could go well for him. The jury's still out a bit.
I will agree with Rafa again.
Yeah.
I think Leonardo's a lovely guy. Listen, it's perhaps a dream for a journalist to have a manager or a player like him, because he's like the most polite bloke in the world, the politest bloke in the world, sorry. He talks to everybody. He's really nice. He's intelligent. He speaks 700,000 languages. But I still don't see why people think he can actually take these two jobs. All right, you defended him, saying he did an all right job for Milan with the squad he had at his disposal.
I think that was an unbelievably difficult job for a first-time manager.
Which is why I still think that he needed to prove himself, you know, with, you know, middle teams before actually being given the big jobs. I mean, I wish him all the best because, you know, as a Brazilian guy, etc. But I'm really relieved he didn't get a national team job like people were touting after Dunga's demise. So you never know. I mean, he's from my hometown as well, but I'm still on the...
Niterói.
Yeah, he's from
in the
Niterói.
House.
Oh, yeah. Nikita Sid in the house. All for him to lose.
Well, I don't know. Personally, I just think that this Inter team, the big players are coming back. The shape is already there for him. They have the best squad far and away in Serie A. And he's learnt enough from his season with Milan to do better than Benitez did, which is the first thing. And it looks like Moratti's actually enthusiastic enough about him to dip into his pocket, which is another thing I was arguing with Rafael about.
12 points behind Milan, man. That's,
well,
that's
I know.
Lot, man.
When Kaká arrives, that'll make all the difference.
Yeah, he was tweeting the other day.
Kaká?
Yeah, he tweeted. He wrote a message on Alana's Twitter congratulating him for something and then saying, maybe we're going to see each other in June. Basically, June is when Copa America, the South American Championships, will be playing in Argentina.
Yeah.
So he was basically saying that he might be back from the dead, etc. That would be the comeback story of the century, in my opinion, if he comes back actually to 50% of who could actually do for the national team.
Well, it's not the comeback story of the century. It's not like he had his legs amputated or anything.
Well, for some people in Brazil, he has.
All right, then. Okay. Thomas Kelly, could you ask Fernando about Ronaldinho and his impending return to Brazil?
Well, there is a goodwill from the player and from his agent and from Grêmio, his first club in Brazil. However, Milan saying that they need 8 million euros or they need not even going to start talking. It's something not about the value of the player, but also they want to protect themselves against some kind of like wages situation. They need to have like some cushion. That's what the Galliani apparently said to Roberto Assis, Ronaldinho's agent. I don't think Grêmio can afford 8 million euro, even with the bonanza in Brazil. I don't think it's the kind of money they can just kind of like scratch your pockets to pick it up, you see.
Right, because they're getting quite rich now, Brazilian clubs again.
They are getting richer, I think. They're also getting a bit more organized. But a lot of the guys coming back are still guys who are past their prime.
How's the World Cup going, Fernando?
Late.
Yeah.
But again, it's going to be the same thing as South Africa. FIFA will be complaining. Blatter will be speaking rubbish.
Right.
But at the end, things are going to be all right because there's a lot of government backing. And believe me, the Brazilian government has got a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So the reserves are there. And there are commitments, there are even laws saying that the money has to be there. So it's not something that depends on a certain president or a certain senator. It is in the legal system, and it would be just a massive cock-up if you don't do anything, you know.
South Africa was the World Cup with the Vuvuzela. What's going to be the defining characteristic 4 years early, this little scoop from Fernando Duarte? What are people going to remember from the World Cup in Brazil?
If they can remember something, because the Caipirinhas will be flowing,
yeah.
I think it would be the World Cup that will greet Brazil's arrival to the international sphere. You know, I know people are talking about the foreign relations things, how Lula, etc. But it's in a tournament like that that countries usually rebrand themselves or reinvent themselves, to the case of Germany and South Africa. So it would be like the thing that, well, Brazil would stop being just like the samba thing and perhaps be a footballing nation a bit more respected. That's my opinion. That's what I hope. And that's what I think you guys are going to see.
It's also part of the emergence as a major financial power and economic power in the world. It's political too, isn't it?
I can predict now that the defining image of 2014 will be Brazilian beauties on beach wearing skimpy bikinis. I bet there'll be thousands and thousands of pictures, you know, camera shots.
Right. I just thought for the fans going there, the Brazilian football
experience. I refer you to my previous answer.
Well, that Charlie's right on that, but some fans will, depending on the draw and how they're going to conduct things, we're talking about a continent in terms of distances. Some of the cities are pretty much dull for, you know, Rio, amazing. São Paulo, great town, great nightlife. There's Belo Horizonte as well. Brasília, which is a futuristic place. But Cuiabá, for example, is in the middle of the swamp areas. It's like really, really hot. I can't imagine if Germany and Ukraine get drawn there. There'll be a lot of cases of sunstroke. Ah, that would be also a memory. Sunstroke and shrimp red pink tourists walking around and then basically melting under the sun.
Fernando, what's Brazil like? I mean, I've seen the photographs. Is it quite grim in reality? I know it's this kind of modernist city. What's it actually like to be in?
Brazil is great because it was drawn. It was built in the middle of nowhere because they needed to actually expand the country to the central part. Mm. It is a weird town, but also a very interesting town if you don't have to live there. Because when you live in the centers of power, believe me, it's always very, very weird.
Junko Partner responding to our talk of Messi, but could he do it at the Britannia Stadium, with, I quite like it if next time a Sky pundit proclaims Rooney, Gerrard, Lampard as world-class, someone retorts, yeah, but could they do it on a hot day against Mallorca? Interesting. Very good. Okay, bottom of the table. What is going on there? All of the bottom half are within 3 points of the drop, Sean. Anything could happen.
Well, it could do, and what was interesting over the Christmas period were the teams that were in trouble, and the teams that, you know, managers that needed results. We talked about Wolves, Avram Grant at West Ham, Mark Hughes even at Fulham, all won. So, very hard to call.
Who's going
to
go down then? Call it, Sean. Are we going to see a big team? Are we going to see a Villa going down? And if not, why not? Because they are in free fall, as Jacob Steinberg wrote only this morning.
I think it's hard to make a sort of firm predictions without seeing what happens in the January transfer window. For example, if Ashley Young was to go to Liverpool, which people are talking about, that would obviously mean that Villa were more likely to go down. This morning, Randy Lerner's come out in support of Hullier, which again might mean they're more likely to go down. So I wouldn't want to call it at this stage. I mean, I did sort of back Wolves. But
that's what you do, Sean. You back people. So who have you backed to go down there?
Well, at the start of the season, I backed West Ham, Birmingham and Wolves.
And how do you feel about those decisions now?
I'm going to let them run a little bit longer. I think West Ham are still, despite their recent reasonable run, you've got to remember they've only won 3 games out of 20, so I still think they could well go down if they were to lose a couple of players in the transfer window.
Jacob, we had the win from the Hammers at Fulham, and then a point against Everton.
Which was perfectly fine.
Yeah, and maybe Steve Sibbel turning up.
I don't think that's going to keep them up, but on his own. He's a decent player, but I don't think he's played a lot for the last few years.
No.
A lot of injuries and been on the bench. It's really tight, so I...
Wayne Bridge?
Stop the presses. They're safe now, aren't they? Yeah.
No, that's another possibility. They're lacking in creativity going forward, and Carlton Cole missed a very easy chance when it was 1-0 against Everton.
Mm.
You look at teams like West Brom, you think they've lost 34 goals. I mean, that's they play nice football, but if they stop scoring and they have that same glass jaw, they'll be in trouble.
Well, they're on a run of defeats at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, whereas Birmingham, I mean, all right, they're not the prettiest team in the world, but they're hard to beat at home and they defend quite well. So sadly, the teams who entertain you a bit like West Brom might be in more danger.
Mm. West Ham have Wolves next. That's a big game, isn't it?
It's a huge game, yeah. It's suddenly looking a little bit ominous because Wolves were excellent, weren't they?
Mm.
Right. You're not calling your three relegation choices.
I'm going for West Ham. I still think Wolves will go down, and I'm beginning to think it's going to be Villa.
Villa, yeah. I must admit, it does have that ring to it, doesn't it, Fernando?
West Ham, Villa and Fulham, in my opinion.
Really? Yeah. Fulham, they won at Stoke. A bed in the hand worth two at the Britannia.
Somehow, I'm thinking that London, you know, a bit less smug about having, you know, we have a lot of teams in the Premier League, etc. That's
But right. I wouldn't even rule out Blackburn, who are eighth at the moment.
Really?
Which sounds ridiculous because they have a very difficult run in January. They're away to some good sides, and they're only 6 points from the drop.
Yeah. Yeah,
so you know they're
but there's together. So many teams below them. That's the thing.
It doesn't matter if you end up if they don't. You know, they pick up 6 points from now till till March. They'll be right in there.
I think it's. I mean, you can see Sunderland are only 8 points from the drop, and they're flying high. You know, it's there's so many teams, isn't there?
There is a difference though. Sunderland have have Ben. They have a lot more.
What's your choice, Kevin?
I've got a feeling that West Brom will fall into it, possibly with West Ham. I don't know. Do you think Wolves? I don't know. They seem quite good the other night.
It's got to be a W, hasn't it? A Wolves or a Wigan?
I think Wolves actually may have more potential than Wigan.
Could there be a big team going down? It looks like, Villa. Certainly have all the ingredients right now to stage a spectacular collapse. And as you mentioned, Jacob, the fact that Richard Dunn being frozen out by Julio. What's the basis for that?
I think they've just fallen out, and
right. And
he seems to be able to fall out with most of the squad. He's fallen out with Carew, Ireland's off, Warnock, Pierce has come in, he hasn't really done anything.
Mm.
And they were so limited against Spurs when they had an extra man.
He was trying to bring Juninho Pernambucano from Qatar, you know, that the former Lyon player. He was trying to bring that. So that shows a lot how desperate he is, When I went to Lyon a couple of weeks ago to do an interview, and everybody was like, "Oh, is really we're going to bring Juninho to England and stuff like that?" So well, I don't know. You guys are telling me this now. So there was this massive rumor.
He's never been in this situation before, Julio, has he? And he probably didn't think this is how it's going to play out. So
isn't it interesting that Martin O'Neill walked away from it before the season started? I mean, obviously there's going to be a belt tightening, which Martin clearly felt was going to have disastrous consequences.
The fixtures this weekend: Liverpool taking on Bolton. We mentioned that. Stoke up against Everton. They're also right down there. Sunderland host Blackburn, one of those tricky games that Sean was just talking about. Blackpool are taking on Man City. Spurs have Fulham. West Ham up against Wolves, that's huge. And Wigan Newcastle, also a pretty chunky fixture, that one. All right, well, we're back on Tuesday, listeners, for our final kind of displaced festive pod, after which I'll be back to the usual Monday-Thursday schedule. But Tuesday we'll be back next week anyway with a roundup of all of the New Year's action. In the meantime, many thanks to Fernando Duarte for dropping by today.
I guess more than welcome. It was a pleasure to be here, the last one for 2010.
The last of the year. That's true. Yeah. And Kevin McCarra, thanks to you.
Thank you. It's very poignant indeed, last day.
Jacob Steinberg.
Thank you, James.
Thank you. And Sean Ingle.
Cheers.
Magnificent performance. Thank you, listener. Have a super, super new year. We'll speak to you in 2011. Ooh.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.